The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Have the changes in the banking industry affected you? With the looming possibility that your local bank branch might disappear and more web, mobile, and social technologies, what will the changes mean for you and your business? Welcome to Breaking Banks with your host, Brett King. The possibility that banking is no longer a place you go, but just something that you do, has become very real. Now, here is Brett King.
Welcome. Welcome to Breaking Banks. This is our first show, so we've got a lot planned to get through. We've got some very interesting guests that are going to be talking to us about lending and how that's changing. But, you know, over the next 10, 13 weeks as we get into the show, we're going to focus every week on a specific area of disruption that's happening in the financial services space. You know, we're going to be looking at payments, we're going to be looking at banking, mobile, social media, you know, all of these different things that literally didn't exist in banking in some cases up until a couple of years ago. Even if we look at the internet, it's only quite new, only, you know, just a decade old in banking. But these are things that have really changed the way we do our day-to-day banking, payments, and interactions in respect to sending money around the system. So this disruptive environment, the big question is, of course, is it really going to change the way we do our banking on a day-to-day basis? And that's what we want to explore. We want to explore what these changes are. Who are the disruptors? Who's going to be the Amazon of banking? You know, is the branches that we see on the corner of High Street in the UK or Main Street USA, are they going to go the way of Borders and Blockbuster? Is this disruption going to be felt at that sort of level in our community? It's going to be a very, very interesting few weeks as we get to dive into this and speak to some amazing people. So, you know, over the next couple of weeks, we've got some great guests planned for you. Today we have joining us from the UK, Giles Andrews, who runs a really interesting, you know, I was going to say startup, but they've been around for a few years now, a peer-to-peer lending business, essentially a social network that does lending. And we've got Jeff Stewart, the CEO of Lendo, who's doing some amazing stuff lending in emerging economies like the Philippines and in Mexico and places like Indonesia. And we're going to hear from them how they're changing the mix, how they're mixing it up from a disruptive perspective in terms of the age-old practice of lending. You know, it's an interesting one to start with because, you know, we have a very traditional business. The banking business is very traditional. A lot of the language we use goes back thousands of years. And in fact, you know, even if you look up the practice of lending, you know, it's estimated this goes back as far back as 5000 BC, historians say. And this was, you know, back in the Middle Eastern civilizations, the Roman Empire. Roman Empire actually set interest rates that were calculated on a monthly basis. So, you know, even back in the first century, you know, we had lending. So when you start talking about disruption to the way people lend money, the way banking is done, you could be forgiven for being a little bit skeptical that this is going to change, that things are going to be a bit different, that, you know, mobile and these sorts of things is really going to shake it up. Because has anything really changed in respect to banking in the last 3,000 years? So let's look at some of the history, and then let's look at what we're doing today, and then let's dive into some really interesting disruptive technologies in the or disruptive plays in the lending space today. That's what we're going to be talking about. Lending 2.0, credit 2.0. Now, at some time, pretty much all of us have had to borrow money, whether it's borrowing money off a family member or whether it's going to the bank and asking for a mortgage for a home. This is something that is part of most people's lives at some point in their life, and it could be frequently. You could have a credit card, in which case you've got a rolling line of credit that you're using on a daily basis. So how would you disrupt lending? If you wanted to change the way people access money, how would you do that? There's been some interesting shifts in this business over the last few years. You know, credit cards, of course, didn't exist at the turn of the 19th or 20th centuries. This was a fairly new construct, came into play around the 70s and 80s. 1970, 1980, hit popularity, of course, in the 90s, where use of credit on products like credit cards went through the roof. We have personal loans, the mortgage business. Now, if you had to get a mortgage back in the 1950s in a developed economy like the United States, it was tough. It was not a simple path to get a mortgage. Even the very name of mortgage is steeped in history. As Thomas Littleton was considered the founder of the mortgage, and his objective back in the 12th century was to try and give the common man, particularly in the United Kingdom but throughout Europe, access to the ability to own land and to be able to borrow money to buy land. This was something that previously, until this construct emerged, was very difficult for the common man to do. Most land was owned by title holders, lords, and so forth. And, getting access to borrow money to buy land was not something the common man could do. So Thomas Littleton came in and championed in this process of engagement of the common man for buying land. And this concept in Latin was called vadium mortem. And if you literally translate that today, it is the dead pledge. So how would you translate that today? Well, in French, you'd translate the dead pledge as gage mort, or mort gage. So this is where we get the name for mortgage. Of course, I'm delighted that Mr. Dave Birch has joined us on Twitter. He's telling me that Bank AmeriCard started their first card in 1959. He also wanted me to clarify there was no United Kingdom in the 12th century. Thank you for that, Dave. Very useful to have a Twitter stream while I'm doing this, and great to have some participation from over the pond as well. So this practice of lending, these practices of banking go back thousands of years. And today we've developed a very interesting approach to the way you go down the bank or get online and ask for a credit facility. And some would argue that this process has not necessarily got easier. In some ways, it's got harder. Things like the credit scoring system in the United States has been a real challenge for some people in the low-income end of the market. How do you improve your credit score to qualify for a loan? Even coming off the back of the global financial crisis, the objective we heard of the bailout was to try and inject money into the system, inject confidence into the system so that the banks would continue to lend money. Liquidity was the big issue. Let's get some liquidity in the system, and then this would translate to grassroots consumers getting access to cash in an economy that was tough. But of course, this is not how it translated, because banks, when they're faced with economic challenges, when it's a tough economy, when the economy isn't growing, banks don't want to lend money because they're risk adverse. At the heart of their business, they have to really look at risk. What's the risk of lending someone money in a tough economy? They might not be able to pay back this money. So we have a system that is a little clunky right now. It doesn't work seamlessly for consumers. The objective of banks, in terms of being very risk adverse and being careful about lending money, is fairly predictable. You can't blame them. Most of them are public companies and they have responsibility to shareholders. And then when you have economies where you don't have these constraints, such as in markets like China, where you have state-owned banks who participate in lending to state-owned enterprises and so forth, then you have massive non-performing loan portfolios where these loans don't get paid back. Is the system broken? Can we fix the system? You know, is it about fixing something like a credit scoring system? Is it about changing the way we lend? Is it changing the way banks measure risk and view risk? How is this business going to emerge over the next 10 or 20 years based on the technology we're seeing today? Well, there's a couple of very interesting trends. One of those trends, of course, is the emergence of peer-to-peer lending, or person-to-person lending, you might think. Now, there's been a number of businesses who have done this. One we're going to speak to today is Zopa in the UK. They're the largest and most successful P2P lender in the UK market. And we're going to hear from Giles about some of the stuff they're doing, which is really, really interesting. They're growing really well. But very timely today, the news, of course, was that Google has taken an interest in one of the peer-to-peer lenders here in the United States, LendingClub. Now, if you're up with this, you will be familiar with LendingClub and Prosper being two very interesting startups that started back in mid-2000. I think LendingClub started in 2007. Prosper, who's another one of these players in the market, started in 2006. And LendingClub boasts a loan volume of $140 million a month approximately. That was their loan volume in April. And they've thus far, since 2007 when they started, they've lent more than $1.6 billion in loans. Now, the interesting thing is that $350 million of that came just in their last quarter. Now, this sounds for a business, maybe, you know, for a lending business, might sound quite modest. I mean, the likes of Chase and B of A probably lend 10, 20 times that volume. However, considering that LendingClub is essentially a social network that takes borrowers and lenders and puts them together in this community where they can borrow and lend money, this is a really interesting innovation. So we're going to look at P2P lending, and we're going to hear from Zopa and sort of see what this P2P lending is and how they grow, how they assess risk, what is the future of this business. And we're also going to talk to Jeff Stewart from Lendo. Now, Lendo is a very interesting model. They look at microfinancing. This is typically smaller loans in countries where you would think lending money might be a big risk, emerging markets like Indonesia, Philippines, and so forth. And this type of lending, this micro lending, was championed a few years ago by none other than the Nobel Peace Prize winning Muhammad Yunus, who started this concept of Grameen Bank, and he was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for this. And essentially, they found offering these small loans or microcredit to individuals, communities in Bangladesh, was a very interesting model. And it's very interesting, 98% of the lenders in Grameen Bank in Bangladesh are actually women. And the community works together to cover the loans of these women in the community. And, of course, this contributes to the success of the community, bringing prosperity, helping new businesses, farmers, and so forth start up. It's a very interesting area. Now, the instinct for many banks would be that this is not a very attractive market. Social media. The instinct might be, what does social media have to do with lending? How on earth are you going to measure risk if you create a social network and lending sits on top of that? What about the credit score? Well, we've got the financial crisis right now, and the credit score system is really being challenged. Off the back of the financial crisis, how do you accurately assess someone's credit worthiness? Someone could have a good credit score but could be financially entering into trouble. The credit score system lags to some extent, so you might have someone that appears to have a good credit history. Actually, their behavior might currently be something that might not be attractive. So how are we going to measure risk in the future? Is there better technologies for this? Well, there's a lot of research right now coming into behavioral metrics, looking at how we focus on viewing risk and how this is going to result in lending. So right after the break, we're going to be talking to Giles Andrews from Zopa, and we're going to hear what he has to say about the peer-to-peer lending market in Europe and the UK, and then we'll talk to Jeff from Lendo. Thanks very much for joining us on this first session of Breaking Banks, and we'll see you right back after the break.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
If you want to know about investing in emerging and frontier markets, or if you have experience in this field but still need to know more, tune in to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham. Gavin explores news, current trends, and insights about both categories of investing. His guest experts, along with his own knowledge, will help you stay above the line when it comes to growth potential, whether in funds or equities. He will look at what to invest in and avoid. Tune in to Emerging and Frontier Markets Investing with Gavin Graham every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Are you looking for innovative ideas on how to achieve your financial dreams? Tune in to Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday afternoon at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Join certified financial planners Ken Smith and Ethan Broga to learn how you can obtain financial success. You'll be entertained while you discover techniques to alleviate your financial concerns. Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
Hi, welcome back. You're back with Breaking Banks. I'm Brett King, your host, and we have on the line Giles Andrews from the United Kingdom. He's one of the founders of a very interesting business called Zopa. Giles, are you on the line with us?
Hi, Brett. How are you?
Very, very good. So let me ask you, first of all, tell us a bit about Zopa. What is Zopa? When did you start? What was the objective of Zopa? And, where are you at today?
So Zopa was the first peer-to-peer lending business in the world. We launched it in March 2005. Peer-to-peer lending is a bit of a mouthful, but what we do is really simple. We connect people who have some spare money with people who want to borrow it. And by doing so directly and cutting out banks in the middle, then both parties get a better deal. And we had a simple aim, which was to provide greater efficiency in what we saw as a very inefficient financial sector by providing better value to consumers on both the saving and the borrowing side of the trade.
So, I mean, did you see demand? I mean, you were the first. So what led you to believe there was demand for a fundamentally different approach to lending in this respect?
I think the first thing we thought about was a question, really, which was why is it that consumers get a much worse deal out of financial services than big corporates do? And our conclusion was because a market had evolved called the bond market, which disintermediated banks, which provided greater efficiency and provided big corporates with better value. So large companies don't go to their bank to borrow money. They simply issue debt in the bond market. So we wondered why that couldn't happen at consumer level as well. The data exists. I mean, marketplaces depend on trusted third-party data, and there's a lot of really useful consumer data which allows informed lending decisions. So we simply thought we could replicate the marketplace model, but do it for consumers.
So, just on that element of the model you've got. One of the things you and I have talked about in the past is the risk model and how you assess risk. But one of the things I've always been fascinated by is that your robustness from a default perspective. You know, you're one of the best performing institutions in the UK market as respects defaults and non-performing loans.
I think
loans.
It's got even better since we last spoke, Brett. I mean, we have the best performing loan book in the UK. We've had default rates of below 0.8% in the last 8 years. I mean, to put that into context, on an annualized basis, that means credit losses are well below 0.5% a year, and that plays against banks somewhere between 3% and 5% a year. So we're a factor better in terms of our default performance. And I think part of that is from building credit models at a time when the world was increasingly over-indebted and worrying a lot about affordability, which might sound obvious now in 2013, given the credit crisis we've been through. But in 2005, it didn't seem obvious, certainly not to banks, who were still lending money to people on the basis of their previous track record, without really wondering whether or not the loans were sustainable. So part of it is, I think, having the good fortune of building a credit model at a time when it was obvious to us that there was a problem looming. We weren't clever enough, by the way, to foresee the subprime crisis that evolved 2 or 3 years later, but we certainly did see that consumers were over-indebted. So I think part of it is simply better modeling, better use of data, some use of alternative data. So we still use most of traditional credit industry data, and we still find that by and large to be the most predictive. So we're using similar data to banks. I think we buy more of it, and we use it more intelligently, and we also begin to use some sources of alternative data. Then I think the second thing is there's something about the peer-to-peer model, which is the fact that people borrow money from other people, and at the margins that seems to make them behave better. I think there's some evidence that consumers prioritize our debts in some cases over others.
Wow, that's very interesting. So interesting psychology there. Listen, we're gonna invite some people to call in and see if they've got any questions. So if you're listening to the show and you'd like to dial in and you have some questions, our dial in number is 1-866-472-5790. That number again, 1-866-472-5790. So feel free to call in with your questions or comments. So Giles, essentially, you know, you sound a lot like a social network in respect to the way this operates, a community of borrowers and lenders. You know, how much is sort of the nature of social networking and community building factor into the success of Zopa from a business perspective?
Well, I think the community is really important to, in particular, our lenders. So we have an active and engaged community of lenders. And the community is really helpful as, it might sound funny, but as a sort of customer service tool. So actually people respond really well to being given information by other customers. Often they respond better to that than from the company itself. And I think by putting all of your customer communications into, you know, discussion forums that may sit within your site or may sit outside them, but also Twitter feeds and Facebook and things like that, by being prepared to share your customer service queries, I think that tells a lot about the transparency of the business and the fact that it's happy to, if you like, have its dirty linen aired in public. So I think that sort of side of community has been a really helpful trust builder. What I think we haven't found, and I think it'd be fantastic to do so, would be being able to leverage other people's social networks and if you like, use people's social networks as a customer recruitment tool. And we haven't really found any evidence of that. And I think the conclusion from that is that people don't really want to talk about money. People use their networks for their own social reasons. They're called social networks for a reason. They're not business networks.
But they're not going to share on Twitter. Woohoo! I just took a Zopa loan.
that nice shiny car outside. I actually borrowed the money to buy it. No, they're less likely to talk about that. Our lenders are happier to talk about it because I think they feel that they're doing something clever. So they're happy to share their insights on that, and really helpfully for us, they're happy to share their insights to other people.
Great. So listen, we've got a caller. So that's great. Jay from North Carolina. Are you there? Did you have a question for Giles from Zopa?
Yeah, I do. First of all, I'm a big fan, Brett, and it's good to hear your voice. and I've been following you for quite some time. So I am calling you, it's an interesting topic, I'm calling you as a frustrated consumer, in that through all this subprime mess in the U.S., I was a diligent spender, and I maintained my good credit rating, I cut back on my expenditures, and was a good money manager. And it didn't mean anything. I still have a great credit rating. It's still a pain. It's the process of even getting a loan or to do a refi. It's crazy because the banks don't seem to know what they're doing. So my question is it's interesting, a company like Zopa, do you think Zopa would ever come a time when a company like that would replace banks when it comes to taking out loans or personal loans?
Oh, very good question. So, this, even with a good credit rating, a good credit history, doing all the right things in a tough economy, it's hard to lend money. So, Giles, are you guys going to be, are you the knight on the white horse that comes in and just totally fixes the credit industry and maybe replaces the banks in terms of things like personal loans and, credit card consolidation?
Well, I think sort of two answers really. So one in answer to Jay's question about the ease of getting a loan or not. I mean, I think Zopa and I'd probably say the same about the peer-to-peer lending businesses in the US don't operate typically as lenders of last resort. So typically don't lend money to people who otherwise wouldn't get it. But I think we do use the data that banks use to analyze whether or not they should lend people money more intelligently. And if you do qualify for a loan, you'll get a loan that's much cheaper. So I think the challenge for anyone lending money is using the data intelligently and being able to form a view of a person that they not only have the wherewithal to repay the money, but their previous track record has demonstrated an attitude towards repaying money. Now, if you've managed your finances really well, and you've demonstrated that, then my guess is that there'd be something in the data that would reveal that. And I think what businesses like us do is look perhaps deeper into the data. So I have no idea. I'm
right, and there is a story behind your history, your credit history, and it's almost like the banks don't take any of that into consideration. It's just a.
Well, they're selective about when they choose to take it into consideration. I hear you, Jay.
Yeah, and they're very capital constrained, so they're sort of choosing to lend their money, perhaps where they feel safer. I don't know, but I mean, it's difficult for me sitting in London to pass direct comment on that. But to your sort of more general question about where do we and businesses like us go, I think by focusing on a narrow bit of banking, so Zopa and Lending Club in the US, I'd be happy to say, are not looking to replace banks in their entirety in any way, but we're looking to do a bit of banking more efficiently and better. So by offering personal loans which have a repayment history, we can create an opposite product that's appealing to savers. So the loan begets the saving product, if you like, because we can offer a predictable return over the long term. It doesn't mean we can easily offer credit cards and current accounts because we couldn't finance a balance that was going up and down because our lenders demand regular and fixed rates of return.
Mm-hmm.
But within the savings and loans industry, then I think we can take a dramatic piece of banking away. And I don't think it's a piece of banking that they're particularly bothered about either. I mean, I think if you look
at
banks' core product, they're more interested in providing mortgages, current accounts, and perhaps doing some big company business lending than they are lending smaller amounts of money to consumers to buy cars.
Great. So, Jay, thanks for calling in. Appreciate it.
We've
just got a couple of minutes before the break, Giles. So, just sort of getting into this sort of bank replacement thing. One of the things you mentioned is that, your savings rates are better and that your loan rates are lower. So how do you do that given the traditional model of lending? How do you make money? Because where's the margin?
Well, the simple answer to that is we're very efficient. I mean, we're an online direct business without huge overheads and big branches and all that kind of stuff. So the business model is simply more efficient. I mean, a way to think about it, Brett, is to say banks have a spread. So the bank spread is the difference between what they pay their savers, i.e. the cost of the money that they bring in, and what they charge their borrowers, i.e. the income they generate from those savings. And bank spreads in the UK are over 10% now. They're wider than they've been in living memory. And my guess is they're pretty similar over in the US. Now, our model sort of replaces the bank spread with our fees.
and the bad debts that result from the loan book. And if you add all that together, in our case, the equivalent spread for us is about 3%. So 3% plays 10%. Everyone
that's still
the deal.
That's still pretty good margin.
And we can make money at those 3% fee levels.
So what you're saying is that many of the lenders today, not only are they risk adverse and not lending to people who have good scores and, you know, or good credit history, but they're also wasting a lot of money. If they run their business more efficiently, then we could all get better interest rates, more access to cash, and also better savings rates.
Brad, I think you've written at least a couple of books on that very topic.
All right, well, look, Giles, thank you very much for joining us. You're welcome to stay on. And,
that's a pleasure.
Yeah, there might
love
be some space for you. But thanks for joining us from the UK and participating in our first show. It's a real pleasure to have you on. When we come back from the break, we're going to be hearing from Jeff Stewart at Lendo and how Lendo is revolutionizing microcredit in emerging markets.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
In sales, are you a lion or a vulture?
Lions don't wait, they just go for it. Vultures hang around until the lions are finished and just pick up the scraps. How can you set yourself apart as a lion? Join the other aspiring sales lions and listen to Forget Patience, Let's Sell Something with host Ty Maynor. You'll learn the tips and strategies of top sales professionals. You'll gain more clients at a faster rate and at higher margins. If you're a sales professional, business owner, or executive, listen in every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel.
Are you and your business well prepared? For what, you may ask? Well, what about workplace violence, cyber attacks, or general business disasters? Listen for Fear is Negotiable, Business Survival Skills 101 with your host, Pamela Hill. We'll bring you case studies of the businesses that don't prepare and the consequences that can happen. We'll also bring you best practice strategies that can help you keep your business running smoothly. Tune in to Fear is Negotiable, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel.
Are you feeling slammed and suckered in today's stock market? If so, then you need to tune in to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, Jordan Kimmel will train you in what you can do to beat up the big boys on Wall Street, as well as share his secrets to success so that you can buy and sell like a profit-pumping pro. Grab the bull market by the horns and listen to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
Voice America Business Network. The bottom line in business.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
You're back with Brett King, and this is our inaugural, our first edition show of Breaking Banks. We're talking to some very interesting people about the theme of really disrupting the lending business, Lending 2.0. And we just had Giles, the CEO, Giles Andrews of Zopa on the line, talking about Zopa's disruption of the UK lending market. And we had a great tweet from the community, Shamir Karkul. Shamir is a mate of mine who runs Simple. Some of you guys will know Simple. He said, my lending club account is doing 8 times what the best savings account in the US offers. So that's a pretty strong incentive, I would say, to get involved and try out P2P. So check out Zopa, the very first P2P lender. They're based in the UK. And also, if you're interested here in the US, we have the likes of Lending Club and Prosper who are doing some very interesting things. Right now, we're going to talk to Jeff Stewart from Lendo. Jeff is based here in the United States, but most of his business occurs outside of the United States. So welcome, Jeff.
Thank you.
So tell me a bit more about Lendo and how you started the business, where you're doing your lending, and what's the basis of the business.
Sure. So Lendo helps people prove their identity and trustworthiness so that they can access financial services in the emerging markets. So we got into this business because we had started several companies, and we had employees all over the world, and they kept asking us for loans, which didn't make a lot of sense to us because we tend to hire people who are very employable, very hardworking, and they just kept asking for loans. So as we dug into this this issue, we discovered that there's about 1.2 billion people moving into the emerging market middle class who are generally underappreciated by the local financial institutions and underbanked. So we figured, well, this seems like something we should be able to fix. And as we dug deeper, we stumbled upon something that completely changed our life, which was microfinance.
Right.
And what really grabbed our attention with microfinance, which is targeting a different group at the bottom of the pyramid, was that microfinance had figured out how to involve the community so that people repaid, so that the community benefited from the repayment, and that the whole process was just incredibly efficient. So we spent the better part of a year interviewing experts in microfinance, behavioral economists, anthropologists, to really understand what was the magic at microfinance, and why was it so successful. And what we learned was that we could duplicate this online. The entire hypothesis behind Lendo is that you don't have internet friends, that your online social footprint represents real social graph, real social network, and that just like you can use microfinance at the bottom of the pyramid to create a social environment where you're very efficient in deploying capital, you can replicate that for the middle class and empower them to access financial services at a lower cost.
So this the conventional wisdom might be, if you asked me as a banker, you know, how I would feel about lending in an emerging market, you know, I would feel pretty tentative about that, saying, well, you know, these are low income people, there's not much margin in it, and it's likely to be very risky. What are you telling me about the way you handle risk and default rates? Are you saying that you have quite low risk and low default rates because of the community element?
We have very low default rates because of the community element, but also because of who we're lending to. I mean, this demographic is the future of the planet. This is the emerging market middle class. This is where most of the wealth on the planet is being created. You know, to put it in perspective, the Philippines, where we launched first 2 years ago, over 2 years ago, the unemployment rate among business process outsourcing employees or call center workers is 0%. You literally can walk outside and get another job across the street. Their incomes, these are college educated, you know, these are educated white collar jobs. You know, think of people who are processing insurance claims, people who are answering your customer support calls for your Dell computers. They're very employable, and their incomes are rising. Our typical borrower or typical member makes between $400 and $450 a month for white collar employment, and that's up just in the last year or two. That's up double digit percentage. So
what's the average loan size then that you're servicing?
Our average loan in Asia is $450, and our average loan in Latin America is about $650.
So it correlates with sort of a monthly salary.
Exactly. Although the loans are anywhere from 1 month to more often 6 months or 12 months, we lend about a month's pay.
Right. So Giles, are you still on the line with us?
I am on the line.
So I was going to ask you, what's the average loan size Zopa's doing in the UK, just to get some comparison?
Just under £5,000.
Right. So very interesting, different dynamic there between the emerging markets. But £5,000 is probably going to be pretty close to a monthly salary as well. It's interesting that there's maybe just a sort of correlation there. So listen, hey, we do have a caller from the UK. Mr. Dave Birch has joined us from the UK. How are you, Dave? Welcome.
Good. Long time listener, first time caller.
So tell me, what's the question you have for either Jeff or Giles?
Well, I just wanted to make a point. I'd appreciate their observations. You know, you've been talking about personal lending. A very specific economic problem is the lack of lending to small businesses, you know, because they're the engine of economic growth. It's a particular problem in Europe. I'm sure it's the same problem in the US. Here, you have a funding circle, which is targeting SME lending, and we've begun to see the government begin to lend money, you know, local authorities, lending money to small businesses through P2P, and that strikes me as an interesting development, which might have more economic significance than personal lending. And I was just wondering what the guys thought about that.
Yeah, so let's first go to Jeff. Jeff, tell me how much of the lending you guys do is to small businesses trying to, you know, get started in these emerging markets.
So the bulk of our loans are for life improving purposes. So education is the largest use. Access to smartphones is another big category. Health, access to healthcare. Usually for other members of the family, not the actual borrower, but you know, there might be for their sister or their aunt, is our biggest use. That said, the group we're lending to is very entrepreneurial. But what we're not doing is assessing the business itself. So if they're buying inventory when they're home with their family, out in the countryside and then bringing it, selling it to their friends in the city, you know, we don't judge the business itself. We judge the character of the person. And, this gets back to really how lending worked for thousands of years. It was based on the character of a person. It was based on their reputation in the community. And in small business lending, you hit a threshold where all of a sudden the business model itself, the business plan, starts to matter a lot. As J.P. Morgan once pointed out, he was asked, you know, what's more important, loan to asset or loan to income? And he said, the character of the man. And for any business, the character of the owner is important. But for small businesses, it's everything. So I think where you'll see involving the community in the underwriting process making a big impact is in the really small businesses. And you see it in microfinance too.
Yeah, it's very interesting. What about in the UK, Giles? You know, how many of the lenders from your experience with Zopa, how many of your lenders are people that are trying to finance a startup, a small business, and are using Zopa as a platform for raising some financing?
Well, our lender base is quite keen to lend to small businesses. So we sent out a questionnaire and asked them, because currently they're lending only to consumers. And their response was they were keen to lend to businesses because they felt it was worthwhile and useful. And as Dave says, I mean, there's an area of economic growth that's sadly missing. We're dipping our toes in the water because we're actually also working with the government, as Funding Circle are. And we're launching a product to lend money to sole traders. So we already lend to sole traders, but we don't lend it to them if they're seeking to use the money for their business. So we would evaluate a sole trader, so, you know, anything from a window cleaner to a hairdresser to a barrister. There are 3.5 million sole traders in the UK. And if they applied for a loan for consumer purposes, we would assess them and, we'd look at their self-employment record in the same way we might look at someone else's employment record. But we've actually been declining them if they said they wanted to invest the money in their business, because we felt that added an extra level of risk. So we're now working on launching a new product, which will be to sole traders for business purposes. And the reason we're using sole traders is because we can put them through the same sort of credit models as we do our existing consumers. Because
what I'm wondering, Giles, is, you know, here, I mean, you probably saw the stories today, you know, the government has its funding for lending scheme where they're giving money to the banks to give to small businesses. But, of course, they've given the money to the banks, and the banks have, broadly speaking, just kept it.
Yep.
Could it be that P2P offers really a much more direct channel for government to stimulate the economy.
I think it absolutely could. And I think they've made it clear that if we can make it work, then they'll continue to fund it.
That's great.
And I've heard the same from our friends at Funding Circle that you know, the government are there to support it. And I think there's a degree of exasperation in their eyes that they know. I mean, yeah, they know what's happening to the money that they're giving to banks. It's either being lent in residential mortgages or it's sitting mending their balance sheets.
So, Dave, thanks very much for calling in. Appreciate it. We're going to have you on the show, I think, next week, so we'll get some more comments from you at that point. Jeff, just to sort of wrap up, we might, after the break, if you guys can stick around, we might talk about sort of what things are going to look like in 10 years' time, where this sort of takes us. But just to sort of take us to the break, you know, how does this community mobilize? In places like Indonesia and Philippines, Facebook penetration is very high. How do you mobilize the community support element of this for Lendo?
Well, it's actually very simple. In order to get a loan, you need to have people in your community endorse you. So what we found is that who within your community is willing to endorse you and what communities you're part of is highly predictive of repayment. And what happens is, some of the people who join to help you get a loan, they end up wanting a loan also. So it just keeps growing. We started with just 100 people who we knew and trust, and then that went to 1,000, and then 10,000, and then 100,000. It just keeps growing.
So it's an acquisition channel as well, the community.
Absolutely. And we were just talking with one of our customers, and he was saying how his friends didn't believe him that he had received money over the internet, and that he couldn't convince any of his friends to apply also. And it wasn't until their friends had three or four of their friends who had loans that they finally gave it a try. But it just keeps growing, and you know, we don't see and because it is a social product, and you have to have your friends on it in order to get benefit out of it, we don't see it slowing down, you know, anytime soon.
Great. Well, listen, we're just going to go to a break, and then after the break, Giles and Jeff, what I'd like to give you the challenge is, you know, what are we going to see in the next 10 years? How's this going to continue to shake up the lending business, and what's lending going to look like in both of your markets in 10 years' time? So let's go to the break. If you want to come after the break, if you'd like to participate as well, keep in mind our number, 1-866-472-5790. We'd love to have your participation and comments too. We'll be right back after this quick break.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Calling all CFOs, finance and risk professionals, your call to action is to help your company achieve financial excellence. How? Master risk management, cost control, and strategic decision-making by implementing game-changing technology advances like mobile, in-memory, and cloud computing, and more. Where? Learn from top thought leaders each week on Financial Excellence with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Join us for Financial Excellence with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Tuesday mornings at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, 12 noon Eastern Time on the Business Channel.
Today's business marketplace is becoming increasingly global thanks to technologies that didn't even exist a few short years ago. Your business might be a startup, or you might be one of the global 500. Either way, you're probably looking at customers and competitors in faraway regions. Listen for Global Reach with host Tay Revez as she brings together experts, ideas, and listeners to help you anywhere in the world. Global Reach is broadcast every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
You're back with Brett King, the host of Breaking Banks. And we're very happy to have with us today Jeff Stewart, the CEO of Lendo, and also Giles Andrews, the CEO of Zopa in the UK. So, gentlemen, just thinking about this business moving forward, you know, we've taken the business of lending. We've got a different look at risk. We've got different scoring systems, which are being obviously very efficient from a risk perspective, low default rates, community engagement, which has been very effective, particularly for acquisition for you guys in the emerging markets, Jeff. So tell me, where do you think that this is going to go in 10 years' time as we continue to sort of disrupt the way people borrow money and even save money, because that's sort of the vehicle that we've seen here as well. You know, where do you see the future of this business going, and how you carve out a niche that sits on the side of banks, or and do you see that this is becomes more of a viable alternative, and particularly with less friction in lending, and how people get access to credit? You know, what's going to happen in 10 years' time? Maybe we'll start with Giles. Can you give us your thoughts on that?
Well, Brent, I think you're exactly right to use the word niche. So I think what's so powerful about models like ours is that we take a small bit of banking and do it better. And that's really powerful. So that allows us to be much more efficient and operate with much less friction, as you say. And I can see businesses like us, so peer-to-peer lending, taking the majority of the unsecured lending business from banks. And I really mean that. I think we could take most of it from them. I think that as a sort of example could happen in all sorts of other bits of banking. So there are lots of sort of silos of banking which aren't really relevant to any other bit of banking. So invoice discounting or factoring is another example of a bit of banking that sort of doesn't really depend on any other bit of banking that new models can simply do better. And I think having sort of struggled for many, many years with their inefficient model, I think it's fine, you know, the kind of stuff you've been writing about in terms of disruptive change, they've struggled against it for a long time. They're the last industry to be disruptive, but I think it's finally happening now. And it'll happen not because a universal model will come along and do it better. It'll happen because lots of small, nimble players will do little bits of it better, and they won't be left with very interesting.
Good, good. So, Jeff, you've sort of created a bit of a market, because this is a market that so it wasn't necessarily there before. But where do you see this going over the next 10 years in terms of, A, your own business, but just, the business of lending money in these emerging markets?
Well, I think I agree. This is all about to change. I think you're going to see, you know, software and technology and social networks essentially eliminate the need, the traditional need for financial services. You're going to see the industry reshaped, similar to the way Napster reshaped music or Skype reshaped telecom. And the reason for that is that the processing power and the data and the connectedness it completely changes the dynamic. You don't need a big trust intermediary when your community can vouch for you, and they can do it with a click of a button, and you don't need a mainframe sitting in Citibank's headquarters to process that and figure out what makes sense. There's more processing power on your cell phone than probably most financial institutions in the world had in the mid 80s. It's just a completely different landscape, and I think I agree that it's going to change. I disagree that it's going to be a bunch of little players. I actually think that consumer finance is about twice the size of media in most countries. And when I say media, I mean, you know, I'm talking about Facebook and Google and magazines and television. Consumer finance is bigger than all of that. And I think you're going to...
I only meant they're going to start small, Jeff. I didn't mean they're going to end small.
Yeah. Okay. I think you're going to see a series of companies like Lendo who radically change this industry by empowering the consumer. And the net result is you're going to see companies that are as big as any company's ever been because they put the customer first.
So guys, let me throw something at you here, Jeff and Giles. You know, one of the things I talk about is building great customer journeys. And, you know, one of the things I've identified is that, you know, if you look at a product like a personal loan, particularly for a car loan or even a mortgage, or a loan to start up your business, what you're really looking at here is a tool which facilitates you to do something else. That is buy a car or buy a home or start a business. So contextually, what we've been able to do previously as financial services companies is stop you from doing that activity until you jump through our hoops and qualify for this this lending or this loan that enables, you know, the other activity you want to do. Now with you know, those tools you talked about, Jeff, the data analytics, you know, the real time capability, isn't there going to be a tendency to push down sort of closing and that risk assessment into sort of a you know, happening in real time so that you can then get a loan when and where you need it, exactly when you need it, rather than having the loan as sort of a distinct business or process in itself? Couldn't it be embedded more in, you know, those other things we do, like starting a business or buying a home? What do you guys think?
Absolutely. I think that what technology enables you to do is quantify your trustworthiness and, you know, in real time, and use credit and other financial services as needed and what's right for the consumer, not what's convenient for the lending institution.
I think that's exactly right. It's all about the consumer. So the financial institutions haven't thought about the consumer, and what businesses like ours do is put the consumer first, and we'll build the experience the consumer wants. And that may be real time or it may not. That's not the issue. The issue is doing it on the consumer's terms.
Fantastic. Well, that's probably the best way we can sort of finish off these interviews today, guys. So let me thank you, Jeff. Thank you for joining us. We hope you'll stay tuned to the show over the coming weeks and have an opportunity to participate on an ongoing basis. And Giles, thanks for calling in late at night from the UK. It's 9 o'clock there in the evening. So thanks for joining us and being part of our very first show, gents.
Thank you very much.
Good to talk.
Looking forward
thanks
to the next one.
Great. So next week, first of all, I want to have a quick shout out to Adolfo Medina, who says via Twitter, great interview, and how are the traditional banks reacting to the surge in success of these new borrowing initiatives? I don't know if this stuff is really on their radar to a big extent yet, but you know, I think Zopa is about 2% of the personal lending market in the UK right now. So obviously it's going to start impacting their business. So just next week, so you guys, I hope you can join us for our show next week. We've got three really impressive guests. You heard from Dave Birch. Dave runs a consulting business in the payment space. He's going to be talking to us about emerging technologies in payments. Dan Schatt, who is head of innovation for PayPal, is going to be joining us next week. And Ben Milne from none other than Dwala, who represents potentially an alternative ACH and P2P network in the United States, is going to be joining us. So I really hope that you can continue to join us over the next few weeks as we explore disruption in the banking arena. We've got some great disruptors who are going to be on the show, and we'd love your participation. And let us know what you'd like to hear from us. Let us know what you'd like to talk about and who you'd like to be interviewed, and we'll try and get them on the show. That's it for the first show for Breaking Banks. I'd really like to thank you for joining us, and I hope you got something out of it today. I'll see you again next week.
Been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. We'll explore more changes and challenges next week.